Welcome to the Death Care Marketing Show.
You don't have a lead problem. You have a trust problem. And trust isn't built with ads. It's built by the brain. Today, we're talking about neurochemistry and why families choose who they choose. I'm Mary Barnett, and this is the Death Care Marketing Show. We talk real funeral home marketing, strategy, automation, and compassion without the fluff. I've got 37 years of marketing experience, and I'm bringing you death care thought leaders to share what works, what doesn't, and what's worth doing now. So let's get into it. I'm super excited to have my guest today. We have recently met, and I was so impressed with her that I thought, you know what? My funeral homes need to hear what you're saying. Her name is Dawn Upwan, and she's a certified copywriter and a best-selling author of a new book called Voice Print. It's actually a bestseller, as I said, and you're going to love it. It's a powerful exploration of how our voice, tone, and communication trigger specific neurochemicals in the brain. Her work dives into the five brain chemicals and how trust is formed at a biological level. And she brings a very personal experience from the funeral service that has shaped how she sees positioning and trust. So without further ado, let's bring up Dawn. Hello, hello, my new friend. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on and share this brilliant knowledge of yours with our funeral homes. Tell me a little bit about why you discovered these brain chemicals and what got you into it.
Yeah, great question. It was kind of a random nerdy thing to discover. I didn't discover it right at first. A friend of mine, a fellow copywriter, we were on a group mastermind call and we were talking about stories and why stories sell. You may have heard the phrase facts tell, stories sell.
I'm a big fan. Yes.
That's because it works. And the reason it works is because stories trigger oxytocin and serotonin. But that triggered in his brain. He's like, huh, I wonder if there's more to this than just that stories trigger this oxytocin. So he started looking at every direct response letter for the last 100 years
that
had made $1 billion or more. And what he found was that there were five brain chemicals that got triggered in every single sales letter in the same order every single time. And we're talking about the copywriting grades. So they didn't have AI helping them. They just knew it intuitively that the words that they were choosing would trigger certain chemicals in the brain and always in the same order. And so when he shared that with me, I was like, I have to know more. I used to be a science major way back in the day, long before my copywriting career.
I would say normally nerd alert, but I'm a nerd too. So it's all good.
I am a self-confessed nerd.
Yes.
So then I took it even further than that initial conversation and did a lot more research and was just floored at this new perspective, a new way to look at copywriting. I mean, at this point, I had been a copywriter for 7 years. And so, mastering my craft throughout that time and never looking at copy quite the same way. So yeah, it's been really fun.
And this doesn't just translate in a sales letter. This could translate on your website, in your social media posts, in your emails that you send out. It's ways to trigger. So it's kind of and we talked about this when we first met, it's how God designed us. And the chemicals in our brain are designed for, and we'll get into this as we do the show. So seriously, you guys stay tuned because it's so fascinating to hear how the different chemicals are put there for a reason to help us in survival and also for us to prosper, which is awesome. Okay, so let's get into the first thing because obviously the problem, it's not the leads. Funeral homes constantly tell me that we need more leads, but what if that's the wrong diagnosis? Can you tell me why you believe that most businesses don't have a lead problem?
Yeah, great. Sorry, I have to laugh because it's another way of saying that is we need more dead people. We need more leads.
I know.
We need more people to die.
I talk to funeral homes all the time and it's weird. They even too personally feel like we don't want people to die, right? We don't that's how their business. They're there to take care of people who die. So more death obviously is more business, but they don't want it. So it's this dichotomy of them wanting to help more people, but not wanting to have to help people. You know what I mean? I know what you mean.
And it's a natural part of life, right? That's the life cycle. There's babies and there's also death.
Yeah, it's life and death. And, we're not getting out of this place alive. So we have a better place to go to. So it's all good.
Elijah. So really it's about creating that trust with your audience, who are going to be the caregivers, the people who are taking care of arrangements after the person has passed, right? So, and that's where, and, you know, something early on in my copywriting career, I'll never forget it. Somebody said, you know, you probably have at least 20 clients in your immediate net of people.
Okay.
And, you know, each funeral home obviously is in a geographic area. People who work there know people. So there is that to a degree, but how do we get beyond just those that we know and those that trust us because they know us, and get into what we would talk about, online marketing,
right?
And cold leads, yeah. Which also has a new meaning with the death industry. Anyway,
yes,
I have a lot of
you're so funny.
So, I think that's what it comes down to, is that it has to be a conversation before they need it, right? So,
right.
And it's tough because in copywriting, we talk about preventative versus marketing when there's actually a problem.
Right. And so you're the one that they find before they need you, right?
Yeah. And so that isn't always going to be the case, but we want to be, that's why we do marketing and brand awareness.
Right.
It's because you want people to then think of you when it is time, whether it's that a parent or a spouse gets sick and you have a little bit of prep time versus, you know, a tragic incident where it's a shock.
Right.
Again, those are going to be two different things. But if you're top of mind because you have marketing that has your brand out there, then you will become that trusted person, so that when they have that experience, they're like, oh, we need to call
XYZ. I know who to call. Right. We address them. Mm-hmm. But what is that chemical? Because we're talking about different chemicals through this. So what is the chemical that fires in the brain when they don't trust a brand?
So the chemical that gets fired with trust is oxytocin. So it means it's
with trust.
With trust.
Okay.
Oxytocin. So if that isn't fired, they're missing it. And also, remember what I said, you need all five in order. So trust is part of the equation, but that's usually not what draws people in. And it's very clear within this industry, the pain is loss of a loved one or imminent death in some cases, when you're researching, when you know it's going to happen.
Right.
So that's cortisol. That's where we start. That's the hook. And what gets attention. That's your pain or your problem, we'd say in copywriting. Right. So that always comes first. And the oxytocin, it's interesting because while we want to build oxytocin over time, in our marketing messages, we still need the five in order. You still need to trigger that pain of, let's say for death care, it's we trigger the pain of what if something happens? What if there's a tragic incident? What if? So that would be an example of triggering pain before the actual pain happens. It's that fear, I guess you would say, in that instance of are you prepared if something
Not really a long-term marketing strategy, talking about the fear all the time. It's just eventually going to pull people away, right? Or repel them.
Yeah. And you're not, I always say you're not digging the knife in. You know, the pain of stabbing them and then digging. It's just to get their attention. It could even be something like, would you know who to call?
Mm.
Your loved one passed. That still is triggering pain because it's this open loop of oh no, would I know what to do? And we have this sense of, wanting to be responsible and take care of our loved ones. And so even that, I would say, is a form of pain, even though we're not trying to be mean or anything like that. Or I say, don't be fear mongering.
Right.
But we still need to at least spark it, because we don't, as humans, we don't make decisions based on pleasure as much as we do as from pain.
Wow.
In order for us to change and do something, we need a little bit of pain to focus.
Yeah, to inspire us, so to speak. Yeah. What is that term in copywriting? It's what do they say? It's the pain. Is it a pill for pain or pleasure? What is it? The I just pulled this out. I just remember there was like a vitamin or a pain pill or what's good for you or what solves your problem.
What solves your problem?
Do you remember what that term is? I don't know. I'm just remembering it. There's like, are you, what, if you have a headache or you have preventative?
Aspirin or ibuprofen. It's like,
yeah, something.
Those things we use when we actually have pain.
Right.
I don't take supplements for my pain. Supplements are preventative.
Preventative, right. Mm-hmm. So it's like a pain pill or a vitamin or something like that. I just remember there was like a term back in college that they said, you know, what do you think people will go, you know, respond to? And it's the pain pill. If you have pain, you want to squelch that pain. You want to get over that pain quickly. Versus the long-term effect of taking your vitamins so you don't get the headache or whatever it is. But you had, let's just get right into this because I think this is what kind of triggered our, for me to introduce you or have you be on the podcast, is you had a personal negative experience with a funeral home. And let's just rip the Band-Aid off and talk about it a little bit. What was missing from a trust and positioning perspective with that experience? I mean, you could tell it any way you want.
Yeah, so I've had a couple of experiences. The first one I had was actually when I was in seminary, and we took a field trip to the cemetery. A funeral home. Oh, yeah. And it was really interesting to see a little bit of their process, but honestly, it was very off-putting to me, and it could have been the woman that did our tour.
Okay.
But, you know, she was decked out in lots of jewelry, lots of makeup, a very nice business suit. She referenced her Mercedes in the parking lot.
Wow.
Yeah, it was wild. And all of the cars in the parking lot were nice, like Audis, Mercedes.
So she was basically saying we're basically charging you too much money because we have nice, you know. Sending such a wrong message. As I say, I've never visited a funeral home like that. Like most people are so down to earth, and that the fact that you dealt with that first, I apologize on behalf of the industry. I can imagine that would be really off-putting. Yeah.
She even talked about how you got a better office the more commissions you got and the more you sold.
Ooh.
And she said you go down the hallway and get a better and better office the more things. And she's like, and you can upsell them with the casket and you can upsell with this. And she didn't use upsell, but she like, that's a marketing term. But I remember just being like, this is horrible. Like,
oh my gosh.
Like very much a lucrative business. And she seemed very, like very showy and flashy.
Very worldly.
Like,
yeah.
We do very well. And she's like, and my office is up here because I do very well with sales. And like, was it was really weird.
Trying to recruit you guys from the seminary to the funeral service by throwing money at you. That is the wrong audience. She needs to read the room, girl.
Yeah. It was weird. Wow. And I mean, the point of it was for us to be familiar with a funeral home. And then I think she wanted us to give referrals, but it's like, oh, I'm not going to refer you. So that was my first experience.
Okay.
And then, actually, let's see. No, that would have been at the end. I have it wrong. I thought I had that first, but really my stepdad died first because he died. I was 3 months into seminary. So he died. And then we did the tour like 3 months later.
Oh,
so
wow.
It flipped. So, and when my stepdad died, I was in another state at seminary and calling and like trying to make all the arrangements for my mother because I was gone. And then I came home for the funeral and everything. But, I had to call around for, you know, the cremation services and picking up his body from hospice, like all the things. Right. And, yeah. I was calling around and there's one place that was like, yes, we'll pick it up. It's $6,000 for us to do this. And I called another place and it was $330. And I just remember being like, there's something wrong, like very wrong with this.
Right. Okay. If by the way, just as a little side note, hello, funeral homes that are listening, these are things not to do.
Yeah.
Right. These are, I mean, we need to hear from people in the, you know, regular people, right? That are on the outside that have had these experiences. I mean, we actually created this report. I did this report, scanned all these like Yelp reviews and Reddit and all these places that people are saying stories like this because they just want to be heard. They wanted somebody to take care of it. And we don't, as funeral professionals, we don't know that's happening, but we could fix it. So this is like really important for us to hear so we can fix that problem before it even happens. So people don't walk away with the bad taste in their mouth like you did. So again, Dawn.
Yeah. Sorry. At a time when, you know, I always say it's like it adds insult to injury, right? We're already grieving. It's a hard time. And then just that experience was just so off-putting. I was like, they're just trying to make money from us.
Right.
Because we're fragile. And of course, you're just going to be like, okay, whatever you need to do.
Yeah. And again, that's probably, you know, 1% of 1% of the funeral homes. Seriously, Dawn, it's, they're normally like, in fact, they're so like, whatever you want. Like I even have one of my funeral homes is like, yeah, for cremation, you know, these urns, you know, start at, you know, $50 and go all the way up or whatever. But if someone wants to bring in their dad's favorite tequila bottle, and we'll put his ashes in that. Like, there's no fee to that. Like, you bring in whatever you want, a potted plant, like whatever you want, because we want our families to feel loved and cared for. We're going to show them the options that they have, but we're not going to force them to buy anything. So, gosh, sorry you had such an icky experience.
Wild. I did have, you know, later after I got ordained and I was working in the field and in my city, then I did reach out to funeral homes because I was trying to build that bridge so that I could give a good recommendation to families, because we had a lot of people that would die and they would ask me, you know, where do I go? Like, where can I get help for cremation or burial or whatever? Right. So I wanted to be proactive.
Yeah, good for you. Good
for you. Develop better relationships. And I actually did form a really good relationship with a local funeral home, and they donated gifts to over 100 residents. I did ministry like every week at a nursing home.
Wow. And,
so they did all of the Christmas presents for us several years in a row. So I know they're good people. And
they are. Yeah. They are. Well, something you said sparked a question for me. So based on that, right, those were messaging, obviously it was cold, transactional, generic. What happens neurochemically when you get a message like that, that's cold, transactional, or generic?
Yeah, I think what's missing, like, you don't trigger the chemicals and therefore you don't trust and you feel skeptical. That's right. Where people, and you have, again, this negative. And I think the industry already has to kind of fight against that. I mean, just sales in general, people have this idea that it's like used car salesmen. Sorry.
Right.
Sorry to all those used car salesmen. Right. We have this idea of like,
it's a stereotype, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's our job to break those stereotypes. So what are the primary neurochemicals involved in trust? Did you say serotonin?
Yep. Oxytocin and serotonin are the two biggest ones. So oxytocin is developing that trust through stories, through sharing your story. A lot of times is how we develop it, because it shows empathy, that we understand what they're going through. So if, you know, they have a story of losing a loved one or something like that, or even losing a pet, or just the concept of loss, or compassion, could be another angle to take. And then very closely related, I always say you guys have to do them right together, is serotonin, which is social proof. So you get your authority and your expertise from sharing the experience of others versus saying like, we're so great, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know, this was this person's experience. They came in heartbroken over this. We were able to do X, Y, Z, and they're so grateful. Or, you know, telling those stories. That's why testimonial ads, testimonials on websites, things like that. The reason, like one of the top reasons, if not the top, is social proof for why we buy. And I say buy very loosely. I mean, if I'm looking for, say, a recipe to make for dinner, I'm going based on the number of stars it has and the number of reviews. So I'm still buying into that recipe, or buying something on Amazon based on reviews. So people are going to buy your services based on your reviews as well. So it's a really big deal. And I think a lot of business owners don't put enough emphasis on that, because social proof gives a lot of trust.
Exactly.
And again, fires the serotonin, which they need.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's true. Like anytime we go to buy something, you go to your next door neighbor. Hey, didn't you just buy a new refrigerator? Like, which brand did you like? Did you have a good experience at that store or whatever? Same thing for funeral homes. Like, even though their, you know, sister used this, they're going to always say, let me double check. And my husband, he reads the worst review first. He wants to see. He wants to see like what they really said and then how they responded, because you want to know, are they a class act? If they respond in anger or pointing fingers, but if, you know, then you're like, okay, no, thank you. But if they're like, oh my gosh, you know, our staff member had a very bad day. She was going through something. We have corrected this issue. Let's talk offline so we can correct this problem or whatever it is. And if they own it, a lot of times people will actually take down those bad reviews because you're admitting whatever happened, or maybe there's a mistake, but if you deal with it offline, they will do that. Most of the time, because humans need human connection. And I think a bad review is just their cry for help. You know, somebody didn't take care of me. I want to be heard. And that's a good way to do it. So, the framework of what I call is the trust loop, right? So a simple structure that you can follow is the acronym of trust. T is for tone. Like, what is your voice? Does your voice calm or activate stress, which is cortisol? Is that right?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Look, I'm learning from you. R is relevance. Are you speaking before the crisis? How would you explain that a little bit? Like, how do you speaking into something that hasn't happened yet?
I think there is where dopamine comes in, that okay. hope or aspiration of like peace of mind that you will know how to handle it when the time comes, or that you'll honor your loved one and their legacy. Things like that is where okay. I see that coming into play.
Oh, I love that. So that was TR. And then U is understanding. Do families feel seen? What is a suggestion in regards to how to help families be seen?
Yep, that's oxytocin, like I mentioned, with that empathy piece of they feel seen if you can actually relate to them and share times of loss, or when you felt helpless or powerless, or grief coming in waves, or, you know, there's certain ways we say things that people who have experienced grief know. It's like one of those, if you know, you know.
Yeah.
And then other times you just want to like punch people that don't, because they just don't get it. And they're like, ugh.
Yeah.
And you would say it's like they give like lame Christianese type answers. And they're like, yeah, you clearly have not really experienced grief before.
One of our clients, I think I was sharing this with you when we first met, he said he grew up in the funeral service, but he didn't feel like he became a really good, I mean, he was a good empathetic or sympathetic funeral home person. But when he lost his dad and his wife, he said the level, like he now had empathy, like people, like he didn't understand how much it hurt and the whole grieving process. So he feels like he's so much more understanding and helpful to his customers because of that, going through that himself. Okay, so we have the T, the R, the U, and the S is safety. Does your presence lower cortisol? So can you speak into that a little bit? How would you suggest to lower people's cortisol, that fight or flight thing?
Yeah, with that, I mean, part of it is not spiking the cortisol in the first place. I mean, we need just a little bit of it, but in this industry, I would say, very little, very, very little. Some industries need a lot of cortisol to get them to do anything. That's why.
What would be an example?
An example is copywriters. So I coach copywriters. I have courses that I sell to copywriters, and they need 70% cortisol. Whereas there's another avatar. I would say in the funeral industry, you're probably more like 25%.
Okay.
So when I do an analysis of any, what we call ideal client avatars in copywriting, I look at a neurochemical persona, and it breaks down. Like, I have a tool that does it for me. I use AI for that to analyze exactly what chemical makeup they need. So when I did my two avatars, copywriters came out 70%. needing 70% cortisol, which is like really high. And my other audience, like Christians, need 35%. So much lower. We don't need to be poked and prodded a lot.
Right. You're saying to take action.
Yeah. Needing to really like drill in the fear or the pain of whatever our situation is.
Right.
And, you know, naturally in the death industry, the pain is already there. So it's more like just naming it and moving into the rest of the chemical flow.
Right.
We don't need to dwell in the cortisol, but it has to still be present because that's what gets our attention.
Right. Gets us moving. I'm going to definitely like have you share with us as we go, like how people get a hold of you, how they can get a hold of this tool from you and have your help in creating their messaging for their different platforms, because I think it's so important that we know the right percentages of the chemicals. Mm-hmm. So we're not offending people. We're attracting people, right? Because the more we can attract them, the more we can help and have a bigger impact on their life. Okay. So we're almost done. So then T is timing. Are you visible before your need? So basically you want to make sure, like you said, people know you and trust you before you're needed. So I want you to walk me through like what messaging raises cortisol, what messaging releases oxytocin, and why positioning must happen before grief.
Yeah.
We kind of went through it, but I thought you could break it down.
In terms of the cortisol, some of the things I mentioned before, obviously when they're in it, it's loss of a loved one. So, you know, even saying something like, did you just lose a loved one? Or, you know, you're going to have a spectrum of people. They are right on the cusp, like needing your services right now.
Right.
A little bit before that is going to be people who have, say, an illness that they know is going to take their life. So when you're speaking to them, you could speak to that journey of like, you know, it's coming and you want to do it gracefully and you want to like plan ahead and help your loved ones. It's a lot of times the angle people go is, you know, it's not that it's causing a problem for loved ones, but not being a burden.
Right.
To loved ones when you go.
And that is, I think, one of the highest, I would say, I'm not finding the words, not risk factor, but I think high on someone's priority list when they are very, very sick or they know they're going, right? And they maybe haven't pre-planned. And so the stress in their life isn't what they're leaving behind. Like I have a client who says there's never a U-Haul behind a hearse. It's like you forget all the material things when you know your time is near, mm-hmm. but the stress that's in your life is that you haven't done enough. You haven't prepared your family enough. You haven't taken care of written down all your passwords or know where all the insurance is or that you know, they know what you want for their funeral. Like that is the stress in their life. It's not, you know, that I made $1 million in sales. Like they want to leave their family something, you know, to live on, but their stress is the things they haven't said or the things that they need to take care of so their family isn't burdened, as you said. So I think helping people through that is amazing. So let's go through some, you know, try this checklist, as I call it, because I want funeral homes really to have practical knowledge from this. So if a funeral home owner wants to improve their trust positioning in the next 30 days, what should they do? So what should they change on their website tone?
Yeah, I mean, it would be very customized looking at their website, but I would say for trust, I would look at two things. How many testimonials do you have on there? How are you telling the stories of those you've helped, whether it's your website or in social media? And then the other one is, are you telling your origin story? Are you sharing, why you do what you do and why you care about taking care of people at this phase of life?
And both are story related, right? They're your they call it in marketing UGC, user generated content. It's your customer stories, and then it's your personal story. As you said, I love that. And what language should they stop using in the funeral window?
I think in this industry, I would really stay away from any kind of fear type language of like, you know, that like prepare for the worst, or, you know, I think
the sky is falling. Like that stuff is not a good idea. Right.
I mean, people, we know death and taxes are imminent. Right? Like, we know it's there. I think often our brains don't think it's going to happen to us, or that it's not going to happen as soon as we think, but we don't want it like all around us and to be nailed with it. That's why I think some of the examples I gave earlier of like hitting on the pain a little bit, like being, being prepared enough to have peace of mind, or, you know, have you thought about the legacy you want to leave your kids, or not being a burden. That's another way of like a little bit of pain, but also the aspiration of like, let's leave them this last gift by making it easier for them because you've prepared ahead of time.
Yeah. That's a big messaging for what they call pre-need insurance. By putting all of your wishes in order and then buying a little insurance policy, it's not very much, like $10,000-$15,000 that you pay today's rate, like, and then locks in your funeral. So if you died in 20 or 30 years, prices obviously go up, hello inflation, but you're paying the rate to today whenever that time comes, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. You tell your kids, hey, it's in a file, either with the funeral home or in the safe. Everything's done. And then it's a gift to your family because you're not having to make them stressed out about it. It's all done. You know, check that off your list. So I wanted to ask you, what is one small shift that changes the neurochemical response immediately? But I also, before we get off the subject, also, can you tie in, what does the role of voice, like literally voice in a video, do for that neurochemical?
Yeah, I think the big thing with using our voice in print or actual verbal is trust, with especially using like videos, which perform very well, say in ads and things like that, because people feel like they know you when they see you and when they hear your voice.
So important. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So having videos on your website, having videos in your social media, can really help elevate that trust factor, because again, our brains are, they do this funny thing of like, when you hear someone's voice enough, you almost like think of them like a friend or think you know them, even though you don't, and they don't know you.
Right. Yeah, it's a familiarity. It's a familiarity. Like, oh, you're looking in their eyes, you're seeing them talking, and yeah. Oh, brilliant. Okay. So where have you seen voice shift trust instantly? Have you seen any good examples of that?
Oh, such a good question. I would say with video would be my first instinct.
Okay.
Video where you're telling your story, like sharing your heart.
Your dog wants to be on the podcast. I'm so rude. I didn't invite him. What kind of dog is it?
That is special. She's a Picardy.
A Picard? What is that?
It is a French Shepherd. The full name is Berger Picard. School. They just got home.
It's all good. It's all good. We picked a time, right? It's school time. Yeah, it's all good. I have a friend who has a Alaskan Husky, I think, and she has two of them, and they literally sing to each other. And it's like, they're having a whole conversation in front of you and you're like, excuse me, we're right here. Like, it's the funniest thing. And I'm like, that's cool with you? And she's like, yeah, we just go off. And I'm like, all right.
Yeah. She talks to us and we'll say like, oh, are you hungry? And she'll aru back. And I'm like, oh, do you want to do this? And she'll
that's funny. Have she ever like said words that sound human? Like, no, or you like that?
Yeah, kind of with no.
Yeah.
Like, oh. Yeah.
Like, no, I think I saw a video once where they were training their dog to like make certain sounds, and it was "I love you," but they put the words in, so it made it. It wasn't really the dog saying that, but the way they "I love you," like this, it was cute. We digress. Okay, we're gonna yes, that is so sweet. I love that. Okay, so this is a segment we call the good, the bad, the ugly. So we don't name names, but sometimes we see things that people do really well and you're like, yeah, keep doing that and use that as an example to, you know, because I like sharing other funeral homes things that work. And so we like, you know, here's a good example. The bad, what is a cringy thing you've seen? Like, it's not terrible, but it's like, yikes, really? You could have made a different decision, right? Like a well-meaning message that accidentally raises stress. Like, you didn't mean it, but like, you know, and then the ugly is basically a big landmine funeral homes can step over when they're trying to market their grief through using these neurochemicals. You can do it any order you want, but what would you say is some examples of that?
I think the good, some of it, and I didn't mention this outright, I just alluded to it, but developing those key relationships in your community, because that trust and that awareness beyond just, you know, who knows you personally, by joining with or getting to know people who are the pastors of churches. It's such an obvious.
You're doing it a different way than that one example you gave, but yes, exactly. We've had like open houses where we invite the local pastors to come through and get a tour and kind of see behind the scenes to pull back the curtain, so to speak, so they can speak intelligently to their flock when they have a problem, and they can kind of be a conduit before. Is that what you're talking about?
Yep. Either doing it that way, like open house where they come to you, or going out and meeting with them.
Okay. Good idea.
There is a stickiness, as we call it, of direct sales. We do like the lumpy package. I don't know if you've heard of that, where right. you send the package that actually like has something in it. Doing that, or just physically going and talking to them. In this case, I was proactive and I went to them, but I was like, they really should be coming to me because we are the ones performing all the funerals.
Right.
I mean, unless the people are not religious and they just have the funeral homes directly do it. But sure. I think it's a massive, you know, in the marketing world, we say it's like joint venture partnerships.
Right.
Essentially right. the same thing. So I would say like utilize the relationships and the key people in your community to connect with and build trust that way.
Love that.
And then the good, the bad, and the ugly. I would say the ugly is like some of the experiences I have is just like the showiness of the industry. Is very off-putting, and you tend to not trust. And not that they can't look professional, but I think it's...
Well, everything with taste, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a lot, because things are, you know, more modern or whatever, a lot of people say, you know, the funeral home directors don't always have to wear a suit and tie. I mean, that's a formal, out of respect, they put on a suit and tie for their services, of course, but in the community, you know, they don't have to wear a suit and tie everywhere they go, obviously grocery store, church, like they're regular people too, but being relatable, right. And reaching out, a lot of the old school way of marketing was, you know, join the Rotary Club and, you know, join and support a charity, which is all very important. But I think, just being accessible, mm-hmm. right. And being open to asking questions, people asking questions to you and not feeling like you have to hide anything. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that brings up a really good point. I always say like, people don't buy from businesses, they buy from people.
Yes.
So if they know you as a real person, then they're going to feel more confident and they're going to trust you.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Cause you want people to feel comfortable to be able to talk to you and ask those questions. So awesome. Okay. So this is the segment called Rapid Fire. So I would love for you to, without thinking, finish these sentences. Okay. Ready?
Okay.
Okay. The biggest myth about trust is
that it's assumed. Ooh. And that you don't have to like earn it.
Oh my gosh. I just got shivers actually. That is really good. Thank you. Wow. Okay. The fastest way to build oxytocin in messaging is?
Tell stories.
Tell stories. I love it. That is awesome. If you fix one thing on your website, fix blank.
Ooh. I would say analyze the chemical flow and make sure you have all five chemicals.
Okay. And you have a tool that helps people do that, right?
I sure do. I sell a prompt that will analyze for them.
Okay, so right now, tell us, how do they get that? How would they find out how to do that?
Yeah, great question. They can go to my website, copyqueensinc.com. Okay. It's in several places. I will make sure. Yeah,
we'll definitely put it in the show notes. So if you're watching this, just look in the show notes. It'll be attached. We'll have all of her links and all that stuff. But the website is copyqueensinc.com.
Okay. Yes. .com.
Nice. Well, you're a writer. So ink, that makes sense.
Yes. I am words.
Yes. I love it. Okay. And the last rapid fire question is future of funeral marketing will belong to those who,
ooh, My first instinct is to say, tell stories. But really, I think that's true. It will belong to those who tell stories, because when you tell stories, we trust and we feel like we have a relationship and therefore we'll do business.
I love that. I love it. But you just actually triggered something in me. So one of our local funeral homes, he had bought a funeral home in a different city, but looked close, and took it on as part of his brand. So they have now two locations, and the granddaughter of the family who started that location before, like two owners ago, came in to his funeral home while I was there to do her pre-need. So even though her family had been in the funeral service for, 50 years, she personally had never taken care of her, funeral plans, right? Which I thought was kind of interesting. And so my client, Chris Miller, we're talking about locally in Corona, he asked her, would there happen to be any photos or memorabilia from your grandparents when they opened their funeral home? Like, I would love to create a timeline, a story about how
story.
Exactly. And I'm like, he's so brilliant. My client is awesome. He said, I want to create like a storyboard, like on the wall, so people can see the history of not only our funeral home, but the funeral homes we've now partnered with to help and have a bigger impact on our community. And I thought, that is so cool. Like, other funeral homes need to do that too. Like, find the people love history. They love to know where things started and how they had an impact. And so I think that would be a neat story to tell, not only physically in your location, but on your website. We actually try to put that into the websites we design as well, to give people a history, because I think that's so important to know where you've come from, right?
Mm-hmm. People want to know.
Yeah. People, what is that line? Inquiring minds want to know.
Yes. Yeah. We do, because I'm going to do business with this. I'm going to give them money. I want to know that, they're good people.
Yeah, exactly. Because we do. We want to know that we're being taken care of and that we can trust somebody with our loved ones. Okay. So the last thing is the fast fix. If a funeral home wants to strengthen trust positioning this week, what is the first thing they should rewrite?
My first instinct is their about section, which again is their story.
On their website.
But then I would look at the headline too.
Okay.
Headlines are always, that's your hook, right? If I'll give you one last thing. So Joe Polish is a famous copywriter who, his one analogy that he gave is salty peanuts. And he said, the reason that bars give away peanuts for free is because of the saltiness, and they make you thirsty and then you buy more drinks. So every single line has a job, and its job is to get you to read the next line, or else you're going to bounce. So the headline is the most important piece of real estate on your website. And that's usually a lot of times where I find some problems.
Okay. And your tool would help with that headline?
100%. Yep. And it'll even show you how to fix it.
Oh my gosh, that's exciting. Well, wow, we're teasing them to get that from you, because I know how valuable it is. You shared with me, by the way, I was so impressed. You did a scan of my website and you were showing me everything. I was like, I'm in marketing. Like, I should know these things. But because it's on a different level of neurochemicals of how our impression and how we read things, it's so good, Dawn. It is so good. Like, your work is so important. And I want to thank you, not just for me, but on behalf of all the funeral homes that hopefully will hire you to do that. Because I think it's important that we say the things that will be taken the right way in the right timing. And so then also when people then tell their friends and neighbors about you, they have the right words to be able to share. And I think that all comes down to the right copywriting and using your neurochemicals. Hello, that is just like such a brilliant thing. So I commend you for that. Awesome girl. Okay, so just to wrap up, as we said, families don't choose the most visible funeral home. They choose the one that feels the safest, and safety starts long before that call. So if this helped, please share with a funeral home you know. And if it didn't, well, then let us know so we can make it better. But let's do what works and let's drop what doesn't. So we'll see you next time on the Death Care Marketing Show. Thanks again, Dawn. Have a great day.
God bless.